Chapter 8. A Dozen Killers. The Procurator. Grain Merchants from Hesperus. Maxilla uttered a yell of disbelief. The leader of the security detail and two of his men opened fire. Their compact autoguns were designed for shipboard fighting and zero-gravity work, low-velocity, low-recoil weapons that fired blunt-nosed slugs which couldn't puncture a hull. But they were more than capable of shredding a man. I flew myself sideways as the first shot spanged off the deck or left ugly metal bruises on the wall. In seconds it was utter chaos. All the security troopers were firing, some on semi-automatic. Smoke filled the air and the air gate chamber was shaking with muzzle flashes and gunfire. One of Maxilla's servitors was decapitated and then punched into spare part debris as it turned towards the attackers. The other tried to move to shield Maxilla, but more shots tore out its tracks and its torso. Two shots ripped through my trailing coat, but I made it to the doorframe behind us. I yanked my stub pistol from its holster. Fischig had drawn his own sidearm and was blasting away as he backed towards the door. He dropped one of the troopers with a tight group of shots that sent the man flying in a puff of blood. Then Fischig was lifted off his feet by a hit to the stomach. Doubled over, he tumbled into the corner of the chamber and lay still. Maxilla roared and raised his right hand. A beam of searing light spat from one of the ornate rings, and the nearest trooper exploded, burned down to scorched bone and ragged armor in his midsection. As the smoldering ruin crashed to the deck plates, the man behind him caught Maxilla in a chasing arc of automatic fire and blasted him backwards through the glass doors of an evac suit bay. The rest were charging my position. I braced and fired, placing a shot that shattered the visor of the first approaching security trooper. He fell on his face. The stub pistol, designed for concealment, had a four-shot clip and I had a spare magazine in my coat pocket. Seven shots remained, and there were still nine of them. At least the stubber had stopping power. The clips only held four shells because they were high-caliber solids, each the size of my thumb. The short, fat muzzle of my stubber barked again, and another trooper spun sideways. I backed down the corridor, hugging the wall. The access way to the air gate was a wide, cable-lined passage, octagonal in cross-section, and lit only by deck lights. The trooper's slow, buzzing shots hissed down the hallway at me. I fired back again, but missed my target. A salvo of rounds blew out a power relay on the wall nearby in a shower of sparks. I ducked away into the shadows and found the latch handle of a shutter in the small of my back. I turned, pulled it free, and threw myself through it as a blizzard of shots impacted along the accessway wall. On the other side of the shutter, I found a narrow inspection tunnel for the air gate's main docking mechanisms. The floor was metal grill, and the tight walls were thick with networks of cables and plumper hydraulic hoses. At the end, a bare metal ladder dropped down through a floor well or up into an inspection shaft. There was no time to climb either way. The first trooper was pushing through the shutter and raising his weapon. I shot down the length of the tunnel and blew out his chest plate, and then jumped off the grill into the ladder well. 5 meters down, I slammed into a cage platform. There was only red auxiliary light down here. The troopers' visors had vision amplifiers. I was down in the guts of the vast docking clamp now, crawling between huge greased pistons and hydraulic rams the size of mature bluewood firs. Gases vented, and lubricant fluids drizzled amid dangling loops of chain. The throb of heavy-duty compressors and atmosphere regulators filled the air. I got into cover. All four red telltale lights on the stubber's grip were showing. I ejected the disposable plastic clip and slid the fresh one into place. Four green lights lit up in place of the red ones. There was noise from the ladder well. Two bulky dark shapes were moving down, backlit by the light from above. Their visors had heat enhancement too. That was clear the moment they both started firing at my position. I buried myself behind a piston unit, but a round ricocheted off the oily metal and slammed into my right shoulder, driving me forward against the deck. My face hit the grill, and it reopened the gash in my cheek, popping out several of the butterfly clips that were just beginning to get the torn flesh and knit back together. More shots rattled off the scant metal cover. Another ricochet hit the toe of my boot, and another punched into my arm, smashing my hand back against the wall behind me. The impact kicked the stubber from my grip. It bounced away across the floor, just out of reach, the four green lights taunting me. There were at least three of them out there now, moving through the confined space between machinery, firing bursts my way. I crawled on hands and knees along behind a horizontal clamp piston, low-velocity rounds pinking off the wall behind and above me. I thought about using the will, but I had no chance of getting line of sight to try any sophisticated mind trick. At the back end of the massive clamp, I found cover by the arrestor baffles and giant kinetic dampers that softened the impact of another ship against the docking arms. Greenish light filtered from a small control panel mounted in the wall between the dampers. The panel had a toughened plastic hood over it, like a public vox booth, and a glance showed me it was a test reset terminal for docking array maintenance. I tried punching several icons, but the small oval plate displayed the message, "Terminal locked out." Automatic safety measures were in place because a ship, the Naval Security Trooper's pinnace, was in the docking clamp, mated to the air gate on the deck above. I could hear scrambling above the ambient noise. The first of the troopers was clambering down the side of the clamp, following my route back to the dampers. I took out my inquisitorial rosette. It is a badge of office and a great deal more besides. A press of my thumb deployed the micro multi-key from its recess, and I slid it into the terminal's socket. It engaged. The screen blanked. My rosette had up to magenta-level imperial clearance. I prayed Maxilla had not encoded his entire ship with personal encryptions. The screen flashed again. I tapped a release order into the terminal. "Dock array in active use," it told me in blunt green letters. I hit override. With a tumultuous grinding, the docking clamp disengaged. Dampers roared. Steam vented explosively. Alarms started wailing. There was an agonized scream as the trooper on my heels was gripped and then crushed from the waist down by 10 tons of expanding piston sleeve. From the deck far above, there were explosive bangs and the shriek of shearing metal. I could barely hear them above the mechanical din in the clamp chamber. When the sighing and hissing of the massive pistons died away and the venting gases reduced to a sporadic gasp, I clambered up from behind the dampers. The entire architecture of the chamber had altered, as the massive docking engines had switched from active to disengaged. 2 troopers had been crushed by the heavy gear. Another lay dead under a steam vent, brazed in his armor by a rush of superheated steam. I took up a fallen naval-issue autogun and retraced my steps. By my count, there were still 4 loose and active. I came back along the inspection tunnel and re-entered the access way. Warning lights strobed all along the passage and muted alarms still sounded. A figure suddenly appeared to my left. I wheeled around. It was Betancourt. He was looking straight past me, one of his elegant needle pistols aimed straight at me. He fired it 2. A distinctive stinging buzz resounded loud in my ears, and a security trooper at the far end of the passage staggered out of cover. Another shot, and the man slammed over, feet out from under him.
"Came as soon as you gave the signal," said Betancourt.
"What's your tally?"
4 so far.
"Then we're probably done. But stay sharp." I smiled at myself. Telling Midas Betancourt to stay sharp was like telling a dog to stay hairy.
"You're a mess," he told me. "What the hell happened?"
Blood ran down the side of my face from the reopened gash. I was moving awkwardly from the glancing hits to my shoulder and arm, and I was thoroughly smirched in machine oil from the docking mechanism.
"This wasn't an inspection. They were looking for me." "Naval security?"
"I don't think so. They lacked precision and didn't know procedure."
"But they had kit, weapons, a Navy pinnace, Emperor damn them."
"That's what worries me." We went back to the air gate. An emergency shutter had come down to seal the breach when my makeshift undocking had torn the pinnace off the side of the SN. Through side ports, I could see its grey hull skewed alongside us, still attached to the clamps by one of its own docking extensors, though that was badly twisted. Its integral air gate had blown on disconnection, and at least the passenger section was open to hard vacuum. If the crew had survived, they would be in the fore section, though probably helpless. Glittering debris, scraps of metal plating, and sheared sections of extensor hung in the void outside. I checked Fischig. He was alive. His Arbites uniform was heavily laced with armor, but the short-range impacts had given him internal injuries. He was unconscious and leaking blood from the mouth. Betancourt found Maxilla beyond the shattered glass doors of the evac suit bay. He had crawled across the floor and propped himself against a harness rack. From the chest down, his rich clothes were shredded, and his legs were gone. But then, from the chest down, he wasn't human.
"So my bare facts are revealed to you after all, Inquisitor," he said, managing a smile.
I imagined he was in pain, or shock at least. To control the sophisticated bionic lower body, he had to have intricate neural linkage. "What can I do to help you, Tobias?" He shook his head.
"I have summoned servitors to assist me. I'll be back on my feet soon enough."
There were many questions I wanted to ask him. Was his reconstruction the result of old injury, disease, age, or was it, as I had a feeling, voluntary? I kept the questions to myself. They were private and didn't concern my investigation.
"I need access to your astropathic link. I need to contact Battlefleet Command and speed the closure of this matter. These men weren't a naval security detail."
"I'll instruct the bridge to provide you with the access you need. You may care to extract the inspection requests from my communication log."
That would help. I didn't think the high commanders of Battlefleet Scarus would take this lying down. I was half right, but only half. Within half an hour, I was on the bridge of the SN, surrounded by attentive servitors, reporting the incident to Battlefleet Command by confidential astropathic link. Before long, I was in Vox dialogue with aides from the staff office of Admiral Lorpal Spatian, who requested that I secure the SN at its high anchor buoy and await the arrival of a security detail and an envoy from the Battlefleet Procurator. The idea of sitting tight and waiting for more troopers to arrive didn't especially appeal.
"Deserters, sir,"
Procurator Olm Madathine told me 2 hours later. He was a grizzled, narrow man with cropped grey hair and an old augmetic implant down the side of his neck under his left ear. He wore the starched white high-collared jacket, red gloves, pressed black jodhpurs and high patent leather boots of the Battlefleet Disciplinary Detachment. Madathine had been courteous from the moment he came aboard, saluting me and tucking his gold-braided white-crowned cap under his arm respectfully. His detachment of troopers were dressed and equipped identically to the ones that had boarded the SN to kill us, but from the moment of their arrival I noted their greater discipline and tight order. "Deserters?" Madathine seemed uneasy. He clearly disliked entanglements with an Inquisitor.
"From the guard levies. You are aware a founding is presently underway on Gudrun. By order of the Lord Militant Commander, 750,000 men are being inducted into the Imperial Guard to form the 50th Gudrunite Rifles. Such is the size of the founding, and the fact that this is notably the 50th regiment assembled from this illustrious world, that a planet-wide celebration and associated ceremonial military events are taking place."
"And these men deserted?" Madathine delicately drew me to one side as his troopers carried the corpses of the insurgents from the vicinity of the airgate and bagged them. I had set Betancourt to watch over them.
"We have had trouble,"
he confided quietly.
"The muster was originally to have been 500,000, but the Lord Militant Commander increased the figure a week prior to the founding. He is prepared for a crusade in the Ophidian subsector, and, well, many found themselves conscripted with little notice. Between you and me, the great festivities are partly an attempt to draw attention from the matter. There's been some rioting in barracks at the founding area, and desertion. It's been busy for us."
"I can well imagine. You know for certain these men are deserters from the Guard?" He nodded and handed me a data slate. On it was a list of 12 names, linked to file biographies and blurry hollow portraits.
"They absconded from Founding Barracks 74 outside Dorset yesterday, took uniforms and weapons from the bursary at the orbital port and stole a pinnace. No one thought to challenge a squad of naval security troopers."
"And no one questioned their lack of credentials and flight codes?"
"Regrettably, the pinnace had been preloaded with a course plan and transponder codes to take it into the fleet anchorage. They would have been discovered long since had that not been the case. They were clearly looking for a non-military starship like this."
"These are regular draftees. Infantrymen."
"Yes."
"Who could fly a pinnace?"
"The ringleader,"
he referred back to the slate.
"One Jono Lingard was a qualified orbital pilot, worked on the ferries. As I said, a regrettable combination of events."
I wasn't going to let this go. Mattathine wasn't lying, I was certain of that, but the information he was presenting me with was full of gaps and inconsistencies. What about the demand for the inspection?
That came from the pinnace itself. Entirely unofficial. They spotted your ship and improvised. We have sourced the inspection demand to the pinnace's vox log.
No, I said. He took a step backwards, alert to the anger that was growing in me.
Sir?
I have checked the SN's communication log. It doesn't tell me the origin of the signals, but it shows the inspection demand came via astropathic link, not vox. The pinnace had no astropath. This is the same astropathic link that allocated the SN its high anchor buoy. That's been shown as authentic enough, and these men were looking for me. Me, Procurator. To kill me. They knew my name. He went pale and seemed unable to find a reply. I turned away from him. I don't know who these men are. They may indeed have been guard draftees, but someone set them on this course to find me, someone who covered their movements, provided materials and transport, and authenticated their business with this ship. Someone either in the battle fleet or with an outrageous amount of access to its workings. No other explanation fits.
You're talking of a conspiracy.
I am no stranger to underhand behavior, Mattathine. Nor am I unduly perturbed by attempts on my life. I have enemies. I expect such things. This shows me my enemies are even more powerful than I suspected.
My lord, I...
What is your level of seniority, Procurator?
I'm grade one, magenta cleared. Enjoying equivalency with the rank of Fleet Commodore, I answer directly to Lord Procurator Humboldt.
I knew this from his shoulder flashes, but I wanted to hear him tell me. Of course. Your superior wouldn't have trusted such a delicate matter to a junior officer, nor did he want to show disrespect to me. I trust this matter is still held in the highest confidence.
Sir, yes, sir. The Lord Procurator recognized its delicacy. Besides, notices of any infractions are being suppressed by order of the Lord Militant Commander, so as not to foment further unrest. The details of this incident are known only to myself and my squad here, the Lord Procurator and his senior aides.
Then I'd like to keep it that way. I'd like my enemies to believe, for as long as possible, that this assassination attempt was successful. Can I rely on your cooperation, Procurator?
Of course, Inquisitor.
You will take an encrypted message back to your Lord Procurator from me. It will appraise him of the situation and my requirements. I will also supply you with a covert vox link with which to contact me if any further information becomes available. Any further information, Mattathine, even if you don't believe I will find it relevant. He nodded keenly again. I didn't add the codicil that if I found this confidence broken, I would come after him, the senior aides, and the Lord Procurator himself, like the wrath of Rogel Dorn. He could figure that out for himself. After Mattathine and his crew had left the SN, I turned to Betancourt.
What now?
He asked. How does it feel to be dead, Midas? We left the SN at midnight aboard the Guncutter. Fischig, conscious now, remained aboard Maxilla's ship, recovering from his punishing wounds in the SN's spectacularly equipped auto-infirmary. Maxilla had agreed to keep the SN at anchor for the time being. I had arranged to cover all revenues he stood to lose. I felt I might need a reliable ship at a moment's notice, and it also made sense that if the SN suddenly departed, it would weaken the cover story that we were all dead. I talked it over with Maxilla in the bridge chamber. He sat in his great throne, sipping Amasek, while reconstruction servitors painstakingly restructured his lower limbs.
I'm sorry you are now so involved, Tobias.
I'm not, he said. This has been the most interesting run I've made in a long time.
You're prepared to stay until I give you word?
You're paying well, Inquisitor. He laughed at this. In truth, I am content to help you serve the Emperor. Besides, that Fischig needs better care than your cutter's dingy medical suite can provide, and I can assure you I won't be running off anywhere until he's safely off my ship.
I left the bridge, almost charmed by Maxilla's generous spirit. There could be many reasons why he assisted me so willingly. Fear of the Inquisition being the chief one. But in truth, I was certain that it was because he had rediscovered the pleasure of interaction with other humans. It was there in his eagerness to talk, to show off his art treasures, to help, to accommodate. He had been alone in the company of machines for too long. Bettencourt changed the transponder codes of the gun cutter as we left the SN's hold. We kept a number of alternative craft identifiers in the codifier memory. For the past few months, and during the stopover at Hubris, we had run as an official transport of the Inquisition, making no attempt to hide our nature. Now we were a trade delegation from Sameter, specializing in gene-fixed cereal crops, hoping to interest Gudrun's noble estates in easy-maintenance, pest-free crops now that the Founding had drained their labor pool. Bettencourt voxed Gudrun Control, identified us, and requested route and permission for landfall at Dorsay, the northern capital. They obliged us without hesitation. Another greedy trader in town for the festival. We swept down through the vast elements of Battlefleet Scarus at high anchor. Rows of grotesque, swollen-bellied troopships, massive destroyers with jutting prow rams and proud Aquila emblems. The vast battleships of the line, cold, grey, orthogonal giants of space, blistered with weapon emplacements. Barbed frigates, long and lean and cruel as wood wasps. Schools of fighter craft, running the picket. Post-orbital space was seething with transports, scudding tugs, resupply launches, merchant cutters, bulky service lifters, and skeletal loading platforms. Away to starboard, the mixed echelons of the merchant ships, the bulk freighters, the sleek sprint traders, the supermassive guild ships, the hybrid rogues. The SN was out there somewhere. Winking boy lights, describing the stacks and levels of the anchor stations, filled the night. Another constellation blocking out the real starfield. Bettencourt nursed us down through the traffic, down into the crystal-bright ionosphere, down into the opalescent ranges of the high clouds. We were heading across the crossover from night to day as the planet turned, making for Dorsay, where dawn was coming up on another day of the Festival of Founding.